variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Ah, caffeinated but not woke up. Good morning.
Okay. You sound caffeinated. Okay, we're in for some fun today. So just to let our listeners know, this podcast is about to get tea-licious.
Tea-licious?
Mm-hmm.
You finding that?
Tea, yeah.
I should.
So I want to talk about hashtag justice for Janet with Denise, because Denise is one of the many fans who never forgave Justin Timberlake for Nipplegate.
Never.
About 10 years ago, Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson were performing at the NFL halftime show. And at the end of their performance, there was a, let's call it, wardrobe malfunction, where he ripped off a part of her clothing and it revealed her nipple. And the backlash was fierce for Janet. It was fierce. And this year, it has been confirmed that Justin Timberlake will be the halftime show at next year's, in January or February, whenever it is, next year's Super Bowl, right? So obviously fans were like, well, what about Janet? One fan even went as far as to say, Janet has been banned eternally, which the NFL then denied via CNN. But some people want to know, well, what's going on with Janet? Oh, so y'all inviting Justin back? He on the good list, but Janet can't come back for the Super Bowl halftime show? Who knows? Some sources close to Janet say that if he were to ask her, she would be open to performing with him. She is on tour right now, and her waist is looking snatched. Everyone made fun of her when she
baby.
Everyone what? Made fun of what her baby? After she got pregnant with 50 years old and had a baby and gained 60 pounds. But Janet is back. She says she was coming back. She says she was going to complete her tour, and she's doing it.
She lost the weight of her husband and that baby weight. All in one go.
So what do we think, Denise? Yeah, what do we think about this?
I think that my ideal set list for Justin Timberlake would be, number one, Cry Me a River. Number two, 10 minutes of apology to Janet Jackson. And then number three, something with Timberland.
Okay.
I don't know. That's, I mean, good, I think though. That, I he's,
that.
Mm-hmm. He ain't going to say nothing.
You don't think?
You know, because he threw her under the bus then, hasn't mentioned it since. And will not mention it. Meaning that, like, I would never be part of a stunt where, like, this dude ripped off he was the one that ripped off the wardrobe and got none of the blame. Somehow came out of that clean as squeaky clean. You know, I think people keep forgetting Mr. T is from Tennessee. He's from Tennessee. Like, he know the first rule of whiteness is blaming on a black person. The closest one, and the closest one happened to be Janet Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And even with her icon status, you know, when things went down that were clearly...
She's a bigger superstar than him.
Yeah, icon. That's what I said. Icon status.
Mm-hmm.
She's still black. I have no respect for Justin Timberlake. I mean, like, so much of his cachet, of his stardom is owed to black music, black people, black producers, black dancers, black stylists, black everything. But he ain't got no respect for black people, as far as I'm concerned. What has he spoken up about? What has he risked in his career? And this was the one time where he was directly involved in something that really affected a black person's career and could have said something and put himself on the line. And did not.
Mm-hmm.
He's still finna peeps out. You know what I mean? So I don't trust him. I don't like him. You know, I suspect he a culture vulture. I think he's a good one. He not on Iggy.
No.
Iggy is.
Well, I mean, he's from Tennessee, right? He grew up with the culture.
I mean, he knows of what he talks, right? Like, you know, he got that Elvis cachet. But at the end of the day, at the end of the day, he's still who he is.
Yes, I agree.
He's doing all the things his ancestors did. And
so I used to be on the fence about him, because what I did like was that he, you know, he worked with Timbaland, he worked with Pharrell, and I never had a feeling of his trying to be something he's not. However, there have been plenty of opportunities. Let's say, you know, maybe he was young. Maybe he had the wrong PR people in his ear telling him how to respond. at that time. He was just branching out as a single artist, as a solo artist.
He all grown up now, and I'm sure he got the critters.
But now, he a grown man. Mm-hmm. And the MO hasn't changed. So let me tell you what put me off of Justin. So I'm listening to a podcast that's talking about the movie Trolls. I didn't know about Trolls. It's actually kind of cute. I didn't know about the movie at the time. And, you know, I don't have radio. I listen to music because I find it in different ways. And he wrote this song that was like an earworm and it was very popular. I think it was even nominated at the different award shows for this. It's like the title song for the film. He goes on to tell a story about how he works with Earth, Wind, and Fire, right? They go in the studio to remake a song that they have never recorded since the original recording in the 70s. And he's telling this story and he's like, it was, you know, it was such an honor because Earth, Wind, and
No. Cancel him.
It's like, excuse me.
He's canceled.
They come into the studio to record something they haven't re-recorded since the 70s and you can't even like get their name right?
That's right. Stop. Be a culture vulture. Like, I'm sorry. Like, and that don't mean he has some head nodders, but really, could have had Alvin and the Chipmunks on some of his tracks, and it just would have been bangers, you know, because they were produced by such great producers.
True.
Right? I mean, and you know, Justin's on there doing his thing, but he auto-tuned anyway, so it really don't matter. It's Justin, you know?
Yeah, only auto-tune.
Come on. Johnny, a river, cry.
Hey, that was my jam though. Like, I didn't know anything about him. But then Cry Me a River came out.
My vision of Justin Timberlake will always be that photo where he wearing an all denim suit with a denim hat next to Britney Spears when he was dating her back in the day. Like, that's his spirit animal. That's who he is. Right? Like, he got with that girl from Louisiana. And they was both pop stars. And that's who he is on the inside. You understand what I mean? He got refined. And he got a couple movie roles under his belt now. Mm-hmm. You know, he A-list now. But that's who he is on the inside. So I just can't with him.
Okay.
Next.
Okay. Next. I got to talk about it. So as you know, the only trash TV I watch is Real Housewives of Atlanta. Because ride or die NeNe all day, every day. But Love & Hip Hop is always delivering us some goodies. And there was some beef that went down. So Hazel E, who, you know, nobody really needs to know who she is. She lost her job at Love & Hip Hop after she made some homophobic and colorist remarks on social media. Now, Love & Hip Hop has been asked about this. And they said, actually, we fired her on October 4th. She claims she didn't get, you know, the actual paperwork in the mail until a day after she made her remark. That doesn't mean she didn't already get fired on October 4th, but I just need to go in on the background of this. So Hazel E, who is like in her 30s or something, I don't know, is dating this dude named Rose Burgundy, who's like basically trying to come up via Hazel E. Rose is literally 19 years old. He was born in like 1998 or something.
He's a baby. It's child abuse.
So the tea. So Hazel E had a little bit of beef with Jess Hilarious, who I love. If you don't follow Jess Hilarious on Instagram, you're missing out. And for whatever reason, Rose Burgundy decided he was going to jump in on this. And he was like, Jess, you're just mad because I denied you. I didn't give you the D.
Okay.
Jess, again, if you don't follow Jess.
That's what the 19-year-old would say.
Right.
Sounds does. 19 of him.
Jess is a grown woman, and Jess is crazy. She, like, makes fun of her crazy. Like, she is crazy with receipts. So Jess was like, what? Excuse me? I'm upset because but you don't even like pussy.
Okay. All right. So then we went there.
Yes.
Okay.
Jess had all of the receipts.
All right.
So Jess Hilarious then goes on to publish on Instagram. I'm going to just have to read some of these. I guess it was like text messages or maybe it was DMs. I don't know. between Rose Burgundy, otherwise known as Denzel, and someone who goes by Camionce Minaj on Instagram.
Okay. Camionce.
Uh-huh. So Camionce writes, "Why do you keep coming at Jess? It's crazy you keep disrespecting her now. Posting her child is crossing the line, Denzel, and you know it. Denzel, she keep coming at my girl. I have to protect my girl. Then she left it me no chance, no choice when she put me in it. Camionce, Denzel, that's BS and you know it. Hazel was just supposed to give you that come up and that's it. But now you pretending you love her. But when you was in D.C., you was calling from all them unknown numbers trying to tell me you love me just to bend me over. Be real."
Wow.
"Denzel, why would I not love you? When I was in and out of jail, you was there. But we have to keep this under the table till I get what I want out of her. Think about our future. Camionce, okay. It's no future. Stop lying. I'm sick of being your quick nut. When you in town and that little bit ass money you throwing ain't nothing. Let's be real about it. 100. Denzel, Cam, I give you what I can. All the things you want cost. And when I'm done with her, you will have it. Camionce, Denzel, I'm over it. You and Hazel know the relationship not real. So why keep pretending I'm over it? Denzel, when you start living your truth, you know how to get in contact with me."
Ouch. Camionce put him on blast and then outed him and then shared the text messages. Scandal.
Jess is the one who shared all that.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Jess shared it, but obviously she had it from somewhere.
No, I'm saying like somebody either in Denzel's phone in
Camionce reached out to Jess.
Yeah, Camionce did it.
But Jess is the one who posted it. And then Camionce went on to just make like a video where he doing, you know, where he like, you know, doing the whole Cardi B smacking of the lips thing, telling his side of the story. So basically, old dude is bisexual at the very least. Using Hazel Lee for the come up.
Well, maybe he like her too, but okay. But it seems like he's using her.
That's what he said. That's what he wrote for the come up. You know, I'm trying to use her to get my career. And so Hazel even like, first of all, says that all gays will burn in hell, or they should burn in hell, just like the Bible.
When did she say this? Hazel Lee, give that context.
I gave that context at the beginning. Most people listen.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
This isn't what love feels like.
So basically Hazel E and Jess were having some kind of nonsense beef. Rose Burgundy jumped in on it. Right? And Rose was talking about, Rose aka Denzel was talking about, you know, Jess is just mad because I denied her. And that's how this all escalated. Then she was outing folks. And then Hazel E was like, all gays should burn in hell. He's not gay. Buh.
Okay.
And you just mad because you black.
There we go. That's what I wanted you to say. Because you didn't say that at the beginning.
I hadn't gotten to it.
Okay.
But she, you know, now, she quote said, I see all you black ass bitches that hate. Stop bleaching your skin and fix the inside first. And maybe you wouldn't be so mad. Love the skin you in, ladies. And, you know, she goes on and it's just ridiculous. But the thing is, she doesn't love the skin she's in because, A, she's lighter, slightly lighter than how she started. She was also always a little on the lighter end. B, her nose is not the nose that she started loving hip hop with. Her breasts have also perked up a bit. She was also coming for Jess's breasts, talking about they're sagging. They look like they need, you know. So she was just doing a bunch of body shaming and gay bashing and all the things. What is the homophobia? So what was annoying to me, though, was that many of our black media outlets were reporting this as colorism, like homophobia, haunts the black community. But that's not specific to the black community.
No. Yeah, it's all over Asian communities. It's all over Latino communities. So it's colorism's everywhere. But what's interesting about this particular moment that we're in is that, you know, as someone who is dark skinned and queer, like black was just an acceptable insult that was thrown at me.
Right.
What, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, even. And now it's really interesting that that is no longer acceptable within the black community. And that hip hop, loving hip hop would fire somebody for saying that kind of colorism because, You know, if you look at like the Comedy Jam, for example, which existed at a specific moment, you could see the amount of colorism that existed just within those jokes.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, it was but very representative of what was going on the street.
I believe them. I believe she was fired on October 4th. I don't think they, who knows what held up them serving those papers, but I believe that she was already fired. I think when that happened, they were just like, oh, we need to first priority this.
I understand. Like, so I think that she gets the homophobia and what that was about. I think that the colorism firing or that being stated as a reason, I think that's new. It's going to take her and a lot of other light-skinned people a moment to wrap their head around that. Oh, I can't call dark-skinned people black no more. I can't call them African booty scratchers no more. I can't call them all of these derogatory terms we have for them in the hood no more. Because that used to be going without, like, that used to be just a chuckle moment. And now it's a, you know what, that's not okay moment.
In our second segment, Denise is in conversation. Let's listen in.
Hello.
All right, so set the stage. Where are we?
We're in Berlin right now. Yeah.
We're in deep Neukölln.
Deep. I don't even know where I am. I couldn't even talk about
the
neighborhood.
I got a shank in my shoe. Trying to make it out alive.
I was scared too. I was like, I don't know, a few days. I was just like inside here. I was like, where am I gonna go?
Oh my goodness. Okay, so what is your name?
Mikael Awunna. Chukwuma is my Nigerian name.
That's lovely. Mm. Okay, so you got hooked up with a Nigerian connection. Okay. Oh, I see now.
Yeah.
Y'all stick together. That's that's deep. That's okay. Wow. That's like
what Nigerian connection? Oh, Ndidi, you mean?
Yes. Stop pretending you all know people Nigerian. Stop. Because y'all know y'all be
Yeah, she, and she's Igbo too. She's same ethnic group.
See what I'm talking about. See, and then you act like it was just casual. Yeah, we just met like people.
We're just like, no.
Y'all
it
got
was
secret handshakes and everything. I'm sorry. I know y'all got.
It's going to be cool because I'm going to London and it's going to be like mad Nigerians. Because okay. I've been in like lands with like non-Nigerians. I haven't taught a Nigerian in Europe yet, so it's going to be nice.
It's going to be very nice. They run tings over there. You know that.
Run tings.
Yeah, they do.
Absolutely.
It's gonna be off the chain. Okay, so how does a nice boy like you...
Nice. I haven't gotten called nice in a long time. I appreciate that.
Being generous. How does a nice boy like you end up in deep Neukölln?
Deep Neukölln. Oh, well, I guess I don't want to go... Hey, I can't. Talk about that part, but basically I've been in Europe for like 2 months now shooting LGBT African immigrants for my project. So I've been doing work on LGBT Africans for like 4 years now. Mm-hmm. And so I'm in Europe now for a few months shooting people here, and hopefully I'll get to come back in the spring because there's way more people than I was expecting. So
it's a lot of us.
Yeah.
And we're all gorgeous. Yeah. Mad photogenic.
Everybody's looking real good.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know. Like, you moisturize.
But yeah, so I ended up coming because I was thinking my original plan was to be in Brussels and then go to Paris. Uh-huh. But then I ended up not having like the connection base in Paris that I was thinking that I would have. And so I ended up having changing my plans. I went to Amsterdam. And then when I was in Amsterdam, I got connected to like the Austria crew and the Berlin crew. So I kind of just been kind of going naturally with like where people are and stuff. So that's how I ended up in Berlin here.
Now your project is amazing. I've been following it on Tumblr, and unbeknownst to you, I think, yeah, we've talked before. We've talked through Tumblr.
Did I send you the PDFs?
Yes.
The PDFs.
Yes,
okay, yes, that's crazy.
I know. Oh, that was me on the other end of that digital line.
That's crazy.
Was me.
Okay. Oh, that's awesome. Wow.
And the photos are amazing. You know, so we picked this project up before.
Wow.
I love how cool. Like some of the most creative, I don't know, like just touchstone works are done as side projects. Right?
Yeah.
So tell me how you came to this.
How I started it? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think back. So there's like, I guess there's a few versions of the story that I kind of tell. So I guess it depends on which one. But I think basically the immediate way it started was that I went to, I graduated from Duke, and afterwards I did a Fulbright in Taiwan for a year.
Okay, alright, okay. And you're gifted and talented up in this piece.
You're particular.
Oh, All right.
You could kill me.
I believe the children of the future. Let's make it happen.
So when I was in Fulbright, I was working in a Taiwanese Aboriginal community there. And I had an amazing mentor, Professor Christine Yeh of University of San Francisco. And so when I came there, I'd been doing photography, again, on the side, talking about things going on the side. Aww. I was doing photography on the side because I was studying engineering, and my family was, like, Nigerian.
Yeah, they were like, you could have a camera, but we ain't paying money for you to learn how to use it.
Right. They were like, that's not happening. Art? What is art? Like, yeah. I was like, wait. So they're like, you go study engineering. So I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. So I was doing photography on the side. And so when I got the opportunity, I was going to teach English. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I'd love to do something around photography while I'm there too. Maybe like teach photography to kids. And I knew about the Aboriginal community there. I was really lucky, and I got placed in one of the only two Aboriginal placements there. Mm-hmm. And especially because they're a minority group there, I really wanted to be there with them. Mm-hmm. And so after that, when I was there, I got connected to Professor Christine Yeh. She was doing research on Aboriginal youth. And so I was like, oh, let's do a collaboration. And so she's done things where she develops curriculum for underprivileged like communities, marginalized communities, to infuse their curriculums with art and culture and tradition and language as a way for them to feel cultural pride. And so we collaborated. I taught photography. I documented the process. Over the course of the year, we worked with these first and second graders, and they produced these amazing works about the Aboriginal community. And after that's where my tattoos are from. They're like, these are these Aboriginal Taiwanese tattoos.
I was like, that is not from Pittsburgh.
It's not Pittsburgh. No,
tattoos are amazing.
Yeah, thank you. And so after that experience there really changed my life, because mm-hmm. I saw that you can use photography as a way to change, to really kind of challenge questions of social justice, but also to like inspire people to see themselves in a positive way. And that project was featured. It featured at a national museum exhibition in Taiwan. That sounded like thousands of people came. And so I was like, whoa, like maybe this photography thing is kind of like going somewhere. And so when I came back, I went back to Pittsburgh. Because I was like, what the fuck am I going to do? I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, what am I doing? And so I came back to Pittsburgh. And being back at home, it brought back all of the same, like, I had all of this, like, trauma and history, like, abuse around my sexuality with my family. Because mm-hmm. my family is, like, African. And so, like, I dealt with a lot of feeling like I couldn't be queer and African. They told me that. They're like, it's not our culture, all these things. Like, we're going to bring back to Nigeria, all these things. And so, like, after all that, so when I was going back home, all of those feelings resurfaced.
Right.
And I'd been thinking about maybe doing photography, continuing to do the photography work. And I'd met some queer Somalis in Sweden. And I was like, maybe I could do something around queer people, the Africans. And then I saw the work of Zanelli Moholi, who's Black lesbian South African photographer. Yes. She did an amazing series called Faces and Phases on Black lesbians in South Africa. And just by chance, her exhibition was in Pittsburgh. And I didn't even plan to go. Like, one of my friends, I was falling into really bad depression at the time. I had a lot of, like, mental health issues. And so my friend dragged me to the museum. She's like, oh, well, she's in town for the week. So she's like, let's go to this museum. And when I walked in, there was the work of Zanelli Moholi all across the wall. And I was so moved because I was like, all of these portraits of, like, queer African people. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen a mirror of myself up until that point. Mm-hmm. And it really showed me, it really moved me, because I was like, wow, like, in terms of lack of representation, when you don't have any mirrors of yourself, especially when people are, like, trying to, like, invalidate who you are, crush you, you know, like, society says you can't exist, and you can't see no mirrors, especially no positive mirrors of yourself, how, like, much can be a rupture within you. And so, like, I saw that, and that really inspired me to think about trying to create something like that also in diaspora. Because it's not just LGBT Africans on the continent, but also thinking about bringing us into our in the diaspora as well, to connect the dots there.
What shifted for you? So you see this mirror of yourself. You see this woman. She's doing this work. Yeah. Right? Did you meet her?
I've met her. Yeah. I met her. Yeah, I met her. Yeah.
Uh huh. So could you describe what shifted in yourself? We talk a lot about depression, but and I know it's really hard to describe that. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that a lot of queer people, especially ones that come from families that are not affirming, mm-hmm. have. What happened for you there when you see these pictures?
of Zanelli Moholy. Yeah, I mean, I think what was hard was, like, when you're depressed, you can't really feel that much, you know? And so, like, things are kind of numb in general. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was kind of like a spark went off. I was like, oh, you know, it's like you realize that there's more things that are possible, you know? For example, I mean, I think when you don't have certain forms of representation, your idea of what is possible for you, particularly in, like, somebody who has, like, your body, etc., is limited, you know? So, like, I didn't think, like, when I saw Zanelli's work, it kind of showed me that it was possible to be queer and African, her body of work to be queer and African, and then also to create work around it. You know, like, I'd had that idea, but I didn't, it was kind of like when you see somebody else has done something similar, you know that it's possible to make it happen. You know, I mean, I think even, for example, when people talk about, you know, like, Obama, all the problems, etc., you know, etc., but I think the fact that, you know, you have a Black person in such a high position, it opens up our ideas of what is possible for Black people, you know what I'm saying? So I was kind of that way, where I saw that there was a space that I could inhabit for me with somebody who is queer, African, Black, mm-hmm. etc. Yeah.
Okay, so the spark goes off, mm-hmm. Which eventually evolves into the project that is Limitless, right? and how do you start?
So the first difficulty was that I only knew, like, two other queer Africans in the United States at that time. I mean, I didn't know anybody. And so I had
Can I just tell the audience that this is because you went to Duke?
yeah, for sure.
I went to Howard, and we had a group. It was called Oshala. Really? For queer people at Howard. You know, this is why my eyes are, like, work. So big right now.
Yeah, it's the world that you're in. Yeah, inhabit, right, yeah. Exactly.
Okay, so you didn't know many.
I didn't know many people. So, mm-hmm. like, I started by just, I went back to Duke, and I was, like, asking people who'd done documentary work. Mm-hmm. I was like, how do you get into it? You know, how do you get support? People were just like, you don't really get support. You just kind of start it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. And then I, when I was coming back, I was on the plane, and I fell asleep on the plane, and when I woke up in Pittsburgh, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this project. And so I started by just posting on Tumblr. I had, like, a pretty big Tumblr blog at the time, so I started posting on Tumblr and just sharing it, and I was like, hey, people, anybody's interested in this work, da-da-da-da. And I was really shocked because people started responding, and there was a lot of people, like, messaging me. And so I spent, like, 6 months doing, like, about 40 preliminary interviews. I didn't record any of it, just kind of talking to people, hearing about their experiences, learning about how, you know, what are some of the similar things that have kind of connected us. I had a very different idea what the project was going to be at the time, because I think Toni Morrison talks about, you know, the white gaze in our work. I definitely was reproducing that in terms of thinking about our pain, our suffering, our strife with our parents. Like, I wanted to kind of reproduce that in the work. But I saw from the conversations, particularly with one woman, Tana, in Boston, that there was a hunger for something more, something different, something more positive. And after those conversations, I was also doing a lot of research on differential sexuality and gender on the continent, which, again, people connected me to all these resources. And we were talking about the queer African history PDFs. That I said. Mm-hmm. Those are all things that people gave to me. Mm-hmm. And I really kind of enmeshed myself in that world. And then 6 months later, I moved to Washington, D.C., and I stopped everything because I had done kind of this preliminary research, and then it was time to actually shoot. And I didn't feel like I was a good enough photographer. I didn't think I could do it by myself. I spent like a year and a half, basically, just not doing anything, just asking people to help me, to work with me. Nobody wanted to work with me. Nobody wanted to help me. Everybody kept rejecting me. And I was like, what the heck? And eventually, this was in May 2015. Now it'd been sort of a year and a half since almost like 2 years. I went through like a bad breakup. And I was like, I need to do something for myself. And I just started shooting. Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, I just had no idea where it was going to go. Somebody asked me, I was speaking at university in France like three weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And somebody was like, oh, where do you see the project going? Da, 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 da. And I was like, you know, when I started, I had no idea I would be speaking at a university in France.
I'm already there.
Like, this, like, is, oh, this is already beyond.
It's your Kanye moment.
It's right? Already beyond anything I imagined. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I had no idea. So, yeah.
And wow, so I mean, like, if dreams could come true, mm-hmm. I'm gonna reproduce that French that question, because yeah. I'm already like, you know, I'm like, I love your project so much. I mean, like, what has been surprising for you about this work?
Surprising. First of all, I was, like, I thought it was a good idea when I started. I was like, I think this is a good idea. Yeah. But I didn't think people would be like into it. Yeah. Like, I think it's still hard for me to conceptualize how much people, like, what it means to other people, because I've just kind of been just doing it. I'm just walking around. I'm by myself, mm-hmm. just kind of, because I do everything by myself. People's like, oh, like, I would love to work with you and your team. I'm like, team?
I got a team? Okay.
I'm looking all around, left, right.
Already. I'm like, a team now.
Like, where? Like, I'm on the metro with all these bags alone. Like, I'm like, a team would be great. And so, yeah, I mean, I think, but it's been weird for me because I do everything by myself yeah. to think about how that's been touching and impacting other people. And so when people are telling me, I'm like, oh, wow. And so I think that's something I'm still trying to absorb mm-hmm. is that. Yeah, I think that, yeah, that's the main thing. It's been really shocking.
Wow, okay. So can people join your team? Can you hire volunteers and interns?
Hey, people, that's why whenever I'm like in cities, but I think also what's been shocking is because people are really resonating with the work, uh-huh. I'm meeting all these amazing people. Like, I'm just meeting you, like, you're super dope. Like, I never would have done.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
No, but like, no, honestly, Denise, but like, but then also like all these people. And so like, yeah. kind of when I go into these cities and stuff, like, especially coming to Europe, it's like, I had like an exhibition opening in Brussels and it was like full. I was like, who are these people yeah. who are interested? One woman traveled from Amsterdam just to see me, like mm-hmm. to Brussels. And then now she's connecting me to a bunch of people in Italy. It's weird. I'm like, what's kind of going on? But I think just seeing how, especially like people who are like Black and queer, African queer, are engaging with the work and are bringing me into their homes. Like, I'm in somebody's house right now. Like, you know, like it's that has been really overwhelming. That's been really, really cool to see that power of community.
I'm really touched by your work. Sometimes I wonder if people feel a bit threatened or afraid of the exposure that it then brings.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how do you navigate that? Or help them navigate it?
Yeah. So what I, actually the first person I shot for the project dropped out. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of, that was really hard. That was like, I just started. Remember I told you it was super hard for me even to start. And then it was very unexpected because within a month and a half of me releasing the first shoot, PBS ran an article on the project. And so that, so suddenly she was like, yo, I was not expecting it to be this hot. I was like, girl, okay.
My parents look at PBS and stuff.
Right. Like, it's a little yeah. too much. And so I try to like really have frank conversations with people about ahead of time about what this looks like, what it means. I want to make sure people are like 110% like comfortable and confident in it. The hard part is being here in Europe and only being in each city for like a week. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm kind of in, out, da, da, da. So I'm like, I meet you today. Okay, do you want to do a shoot tomorrow? And so like, it's been hard to kind of have that same level of process as I like to do. And so, I mean, some people are still like, now, because I'll shoot them. I used to try to develop relationships, but now it's been so fast. And so, but yeah, people were definitely, some people now are like, kind of like, oh, we'll do a shoot. And they'll be like, oh no. And so that's been hard, but I also really respect where people are at. And so like, if they're not, I'll be like, hey, oh, I would really love for you to still be in the project, but like, I totally understand, like, you know, mm-hmm. so it is what it is.
Some years ago, there was a document, someone who shall not be named, mm-hmm. trying to do a documentary and was working with the community. And the way that they were working with the community felt a bit exploitive. Mm-hmm. And one of my personal things that I go is like, okay, so yeah, everyone signs a release and mm-hmm. and that. However, if people want to pull out after all has been said and done and I've edited it and I've spent like hours on it, I still try to respect that decision, but it's very, very frustrating, especially as, for like an unpaid like passion project, right?
Exactly.
So that's just my rule, right? Yes. Do you have any particular rules that you feel that you've sort of developed for yourself that makes the work feel more reciprocal, more ethical for you?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a good point, you know, in terms of the ethicality, etc. I think, you know, there definitely have been challenges around that, and especially, like, as the work kind of gets more, you know, visible and stuff, I think people assume that visibility equals money, and that is not the case, you know, especially when you don't have a job, you know, it's not, doesn't equal in the same way. And so I think people might have different expectations about what, in terms of like what I have, etc. And they're like, oh, you know, so in terms of even talking about releases and stuff, people are like, oh, like, what does that mean? I'm like, and so I think it's kind of having fair conversations about what that looks like. I think also I've been learning a lot, particularly around like gender. And somebody the other day was like, oh, wow, you're so good with pronouns. And I'm just like, what? That's what I was supposed to be. But that's something I've learned through the project. You know what I'm saying? Like, even, but even like removing questions. For example, like, even just like, I kind of like try to respond to feedback and things that I hear from people. And so, like, we used to have a question that I used to ask people about, like, what's their ethnicity? Because in Nigeria, that's huge. Like, oh, what's your ethnic group? Da, da, da. But I was asking somebody who is Burundian, and that's super loaded. You know what I'm saying? So I think I try to just be really responsive. In terms of, like, in terms of practice, though, I, people choose their own outfits and stuff, so I think that there's this piece around them kind of forming how they want to be represented. And then I also send them the photos afterwards, the processed photos, and from their point, they can, like, look through and let me know what some of their favorites are. I used to do it where people would actually choose the photos. That was kind of really frustrating, because then I was like, so I had some of my favorite photos which were getting cut, and so now it's like, instead it's more a conversation. It's not like you choose all the photos. I mean, like, you know, there's still like a process where it's like, you know, we're working together, and, you know, if you trust me as a photographer, as an artist, we can, you know, trust each other. So you can let me know which ones you really like, you know, you can use them whatever you want, whichever ones, but then like my final cut is might look different, probably look different. So I think there's things about being in conversation with people that I think helps. But yeah, it's definitely been, it's been challenging at times, because it's like, especially when you're working with like so many people, and I think especially when you work with people who like, when think about like money and stuff, I think that's when things can get a little bit weird sometimes with people.
Have you thought about monetizing the project?
So, I mean, I definitely have been able to, like, sell some prints and stuff. Like, I did a Kickstarter. Kickstarter's not really monetizing, but, like, Kickstarters and stuff. But, like, it's not really... But, like, I mean, yeah, I would love to find ways to do that. So, I'm all ears. I'm all ears. Especially because before I was funding it with my job. You're talking about side. Yeah. I was funding it with my work. Mm-hmm. But now that I'm here, I mean, I saved up money, Kickstarter, and now I'm kind of just going with it. Mm-hmm. But especially looking towards next year, I gotta figure out ways. So
that it could be sustainable.
Sustainable. Yeah. I think speaking has helped me, but yeah.
One of the things that keeps us going with projects like this is that it's an internal project as well, right? We are the population that we are now we are part of the population that we're documenting. This is actually an unusual thing, especially in the European context, right? So when you look at documentary work that's being done on Africa or Black people or migrants or whatever, the experts, the European experts on that are not necessarily from that community, as a matter of fact, it's almost like expected that they're not from that community, in keeping with this like Western notion of objectivity. It's really bad. Let's talk about like certain magic moments of documenting a project where people are dealing with you, right? Like, what do you feel is happening there?
Yeah. I think what you're saying is really beautiful, because, I think it means something, you know. It's like when we're like, I remember I'll be sharing with people, for example, how my family put me through exorcisms in Nigeria for being gay, queer, whatever, you know. But, and then somebody, there was a moment where one of the women in the project turned to me and she's like, yeah, me too, mm-hmm. you know. And so I think there's a level of connection there around intimacy with the subject, intimacy with the challenges that somebody who wasn't there, who's not like black and queer or trans, would just not get it, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think it definitely means something, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, especially rather than kind of swooping in as like kind of like a voyeur and being like, oh, I've heard about this issue, da 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 da. People know that you understand where they're coming from. And so I think that has meant, that's kind of been one of those moments where I saw how much it means for people to be actually from the community.
How has this changed your life?
Yeah.
Just small questions here. Just chit-chat. We want to elevate it. We're talking about it. We're going to drop it. Let's get into it.
I mean, completely, like, how would I even start? I think, for me, there's been very much, like, also, like, a spiritual shift that has come with this. So it's not even just about me feeling like, oh, I'm okay being queer and African. Like, I think those are, like, identity stuff. But I think, for me, like, I've changed as my soul has changed because I've interacted with all of these incredible people. And I think also, I really believe that particularly black people, but particularly black queer and trans people, are really connected to spirituality on a deeper level. I think that we have these connections to the universe, to this deeper understanding of life and being that is just beyond just this physical plane here, which is so, you know, destructive towards us. I think there's this deeper level of being. And so I think even interacting with all of these beautiful spirits, it has really helped me to kind of glorify in who I am. And so I think that for me has been really big. I've started actually a new project that's been kind of exploring that around like black body and the connection to the universe, to the cosmos. And that's something that's been inspired by the work in the world and the connections I've built here. So it's like that, yeah, I think that's the one of the biggest things for sure.
Well, I could talk to you forever. You know this, right? you know you have an instant best friend now.
Yeah,
right?
You're super cool. You're super cool.
Oh my goodness. But we are under some crazy time constraints.
Yeah, we've been going crazy. We've been trying to figure it out.
How can people find out about your projects?
Yeah, so people can, name spelling. My name is Mikael Owona. It's like Michael with, okay, MIKAELOWUNNA. Or the easiest way is just to look up the name of the project, which is Limitless Africans. So you can just look it up as on Instagram, Limitless Africans, there's a hashtag. Or you can just, there's a website, limitlessafricans.com.
That's beautiful. I just want to say thank you so much for talking.
Yeah, thank you. It was really a pleasure.
Yeah, and it's been a pleasure for me, and we will talk again.
Yes, I'm super excited.
In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? Hit it!
Look at you with the hit it. Hit it. So here's what I'm excited about. Here's what I'm looking forward to. Here in Vienna, we have a place called X Space that is a POC queer black artist space that has been created. And so I have just started partnering with them to have the black movie night there. So that's awesome. Happening tonight.
What are y'all and watching?
Daughters of Dust, boo boo. Daughters of
Dust. I already did that. I did that with my Black for Women's group. Copycat.
Yeah, make it happen. So we got to,
that's dope.
That's dope. We watched it Daughters in the Dust.
Can I be real though? I was a little confused throughout most of the movie. Like, it took a long time for the penny to drop.
Sure. Sure. Yes.
And then we did hit up the Wikipedia after, just to be clear on a few things.
Right. It's an abstract movie to a certain extent. Like, it's not a super straightforward movie. It doesn't have a lineal kind of time chronology. And yeah, there's a lot going on in Daughters of the Dust, but it's such an important movie in Black cinematic history.
Absolutely.
And I'm very excited to watch it. What are you excited about? What are you looking forward to?
Well, today is October 27th. Oops. Stranger Things season 2 is going to be released. Stranger Things. This weekend is kind of like the holiday, the Halloween turn up in London, because Halloween is, you know, on a Tuesday. So since it's Halloween weekend, a bunch of us are going to something called Fright Nights, which takes place at an amusement park where people actually pay money to be scared. So that's what I'm putting myself through this weekend. But mostly excited about watching Stranger Things and then paying money for people to scare me. You know, I haven't gone to a good haunted house since living in the U.S. So
I'm the U.S. is a haunted house.
Okay. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you want to support us, you can via patreon.com/TheQueerTruth with a small monthly donation. Until next time, peace out.